So welcome to lecture three. Today we're going to look at more vector spaces that we can attach to a point P of a manifold. So recall last time we saw what the tangent space is, the tangent vectors. Today we're going to look at covectors and the cotangent space. And then we're going to look at tensors and the various tensor spaces that we can build. Before we start, are there any questions about what we did last time? Okay, then we can start with the definition of cotangent space. Actually, let's wait a moment so Caroline can set up. Okay, so the cotangent space, it's very simple to define if you already know what the dual of a vector space is, but if you don't, I'm going to describe it in a moment. So the cotangent space, we're going to denote by T star PM. So again, T is for the tangent, but then the star is for the co part. P is the point of the manifold at which we are, and M is the manifold. So this is simply the dual space to the tangent space, TPM. So if you know what the dual space is, this is all you need to know. If you don't, then I'm going to just describe what they are right now. Now, dual spaces are just a kind of vector space that we can build out of another one. So if V is a finite dimensional real vector space, then the dual space, which we denote by V star, is simply the set of all the linear maps that go from V itself to R. And of course, this is just a set at this point. In order for this to be a vector space, we need to give it a vector space structure. So the way we do that is by defining the structure, really the operations, point-wise. This means that if alpha is an element of V star, and A is an element of R. If we want to define scalar multiplication, we just say that A times alpha as a function when it acts on a vector is just A times alpha acting on the vector. So at each point, we first make alpha do whatever it needs to do, and then we multiply by the real number. And similarly, if alpha and beta are in V star, then alpha plus beta, when it acts on a vector, it's just going to be the sum of alpha of V plus beta of V. This is something that you can do quite often, and it all works because these are functions that map to R, but R itself is a vector space. So we can just do whatever vector operations we need to do after we apply the map. Everything clear so far? Okay. We're going to call covectors the elements of V star. They are still vectors because it's a vector space, but just to distinguish them from the original vectors, we're going to call them covectors. Now, it's going to be helpful for the following to have a basis of this covector space. So we're going to start with the basis of V itself. So there's this set of the EIs, which are just the basis of V. I'm assuming the dimension is n, so there's n of them. And then we're going to just try to prove very quickly this proposition. The linear maps defined like this, I'm going to call them epsilon I, and they just correspond to the EI, so there's going to be n of them, are linear maps, and they satisfy this. If you act with epsilon I on EJ, you're going to get the delta AJ. So if the I and J match, you get 1, otherwise you get 0. And that's all you need. And these maps form a basis for the dual space V star. So of course, there are a few things that you need to make sure of. First of all, this map needs to be linear. And the reason why I'm just telling you what happens when you act on the basis is that linear maps are fully specified by acting on a basis. So if I tell you that these maps epsilon I do this on a basis, that's all you need to know. Okay, so let's check that this is actually a basis. First of all, because, as I said, linear maps are fully specified by how they act on a basis, if I have a generic vector, which is a linear combination of the basis, I act with alpha on it, but alpha is linear, I can pull out the coefficients vi, and then I only have this. So remembering this and noting that if I act with epsilon I on a vector vj, ej, again, I can pull out the coefficients vj, but then this is just a delta. So eventually I end up with vi. So these functions that I defined, all they do is pull out the coefficients out of a vector. If I give you a vector, it's going to tell you epsilon I is going to tell you what the ith coefficient is. And this means that putting together this with this, this vi appearing here, it's simply epsilon I of the vector v. And so in general, alpha can be written in this way. So it's going to be a linear combination of some numbers, which are just alpha acting on the vector, and these linear maps. Now, of course, you still need to show that these maps are linearly independent, because right now we only show that they span the whole set. We didn't show that they're actually linearly independent. I'm going to leave this to you. It's not a difficult thing to show. So once you do this, then indeed this is going to be a basis. And if this is a basis, this tells us a couple of interesting things. One of them is that the dimension of V star is the same as the dimension of V, because we have the same number of basis elements. And this means that V is isomorphic to V star. And in fact, this map that maps EI to epsilon I, that's exactly the isomorphism. Everyone still with me at this point? Can I go on? Hold on. I have written this already, but it's fine. Just a little bit of nomenclature. This basis of the epsilon I, we're going to call it the dual basis to the basis EI. So anytime you have a basis, you can build a dual basis. And of course, different bases are going to lead to different dual bases. So this is a notion that's basis dependent. And just one note about this, this isomorphism that we built, we say it's not a canonical one, in the sense that in order to construct it, we need extra information, which is the basis. I cannot just come up with an isomorphism between these two sets if I don't give you a basis first. Okay, so now back to manifolds. Remember, the cotangent space is simply the dual of the tangent space. So T star PM is the dual of TPM, which again is a vector space. Everything in it, we're going to call it covectors at the point. But now the question becomes, can we give a basis to this as well? Because remember, last time we gave a basis to TPM by stealing it from Rn. And if we want to give a basis to the tangent, to cotangent space, then all we need to do is construct a dual basis. So if phi is a chart which has coordinates x1, x2, and so on, then remember that the basis of TPM is given by these vectors. Then the dual basis is just going to be the linear maps that are defined as above, the epsilon I that I defined earlier. In this specific case, we're going to give them actual names. We're going to call them DXIP. So this is the equivalent of epsilon I from before. At this point, it's not going to be clear why I called it exactly this, but it is going to be clear once you see differential forms. and the exterior derivative, because this is actually going to be the exterior derivative acting on the coordinate charts. But you will see that next week. So this is defined just in this way, which is the definition of the dual basis. These linear maps, when they act on the basis vectors d over dxj, they're just going to give a delta with the I here and the j. So that's all we need to say about this.
Shouldn't be a star there, right? It's mapping.
Yes, yes, you are correct. There should be no star here because the map is from the vector space itself. Thank you for catching that. Okay, so this is the basis that we're going to use. Now, as something that you might find interesting or not, if you remember the map d phi p from last time, it turns out that these are actually the components of this map. Not that it matters very much, but if you remember, this map goes from EPM to Rn. So all we're doing is, instead of having one map that goes from a vector space to Rn, we have n maps that go from the vector space to R. So you have actually seen these things already. Okay, so that's almost everything about this, but just as we did the change of basis for vectors, it's going to be useful to have the changes of basis for covectors. So if you have a different chart, which we're going to call psi, and now the coordinates are y1, y2, and so on, still at the same point. I'm not going to show this because it's exactly the same procedure as last time, but if you want to do the change of basis, this new basis, which is the dual to the basis d over dy I, it's simply going to be given by this, which is essentially the inverse of the matrix elements from last time. So it's going to be the derivative of this time, instead of phi composed psi to the minus one, we have psi composed with phi to the minus one. But with the same abuse of notation from last time, it's easier to write it out as this. So you're really taking the derivatives of the map psi in terms of the other map. And this makes again clear why we're choosing these exact notations for these vectors, because now it just seems like we are multiplying and dividing by dxj and summing over them. So it's very easy to remember. And just as what happens with vectors, from these, you can then show how the components transform, and that's what you're probably seeing in your GR courses. Is this part clear? I know I went very fast on it, but it's really the same as what we did last time. But if it's not clear, then you can always ask me about it later. Okay, well, that was everything about the cotangent space. Now we're going to look at tensors, which are more interesting. Before we look at tensors, I want to look again at the dual space, but I want to look at it twice. So we're going to look at the double dual space. And that's the reason why we're doing this. So if we have a vector space V, since we can take duals, we can take duals again. So we can take the dual of the dual. And as we've seen, taking the dual gives us a vector space which is isomorphic to the first one. So we can start with V, then we construct V star, and then we have V star star, which is still isomorphic to the original one. But this one is now going to be maps that go from V star to R, and they are linear, because these are constructed as the dual of the dual. The nice thing about the double dual space is that there is a canonical isomorphism. And as I said before, this means that we can construct these without a basis. I don't need to know what the basis of V is. I can always, in a natural way, come up with an isomorphism between this set and this set as vector spaces. The isomorphism is going to be given by this one. we have this map phi that goes from the vector space to its double dual. And just to simplify notation, I'm going to send v to this phi with the subscript v. And this is going to be a map that acts on elements of v star. And if I have this map acting on this element of v star, then by definition, what's going to happen is that I instead take the vector v and I feed it to alpha. So what I'm really saying here is that we can think of a vector acting on a covector by actually sending the vector inside the covector. So it's a dual picture in the sense that you are seeing an action from the other point of view. You're thinking that, yes, alpha acts on v by applying itself to it, but also v acts on alpha by feeding itself to it. So it's just a reverse point of view in which the action is being done by the element and not by the function. Now, the reason why this is very interesting is that it allows us to naturally identify vectors with linear maps that goes from v star to r. And this means that vectors and covectors are kind of the same. Before, they used to be very different objects. Vectors are vectors, covectors are maps. But now we can identify vectors with maps as well. So we have two things that are essentially the same. And once we have this notion, we can try to generalize it to something that's more than just linear maps. Is this point clear to everyone? It's a bit weird the first time you see it. Of course, if it's not the first time, then you're going to know already. But it's going to get clearer, I think, when we see tensors, because that generalizes this idea. So to recap, covectors are linear maps that go from V to R. And from now on, at least in this lecture, vectors, we're going to think of them as being, in quotes, because they are not really, but we identify them with that, linear maps that go from V star to R. So they just look the same. It's just that if you put a co here, then there is no star here. If you don't put a co here, then the star needs to go here. So one thing needs to have a star. It's either the vector space here or the thing that you're talking about. Tensors are a way to generalize this idea. Any questions before I show you the definition of a tensor? Yes?
Just curious. V being isomorphic to V star star is true if V is finite dimensional. Is this generalized?
Yes, that's a great question. So this thing that I told you about of V being isomorphic to V star star, we're assuming here that we're dealing with finite dimensional vector spaces. If V is not a finite dimensional vector space, you can still define all these things, but V is not going to be isomorphic to its dual in the first place, which means that if you take the double dual, it's also not going to be true. So that's something that happens in infinitely many dimensions. If you have extra structure, you can do something. If you have a vector space, which is infinite dimensional and has a topology, then you can talk about linear maps being continuous, and then you only take those ones. So instead of the actual dual that has everything, you only take the continuous dual, which has only the continuous maps, and that one is going to be isomorphic. But in this case, we don't have to worry about any of these because we're dealing with finite dimensional manifolds. It's a good question, though, because you can define infinite dimensional manifolds, and if you want to talk about the tangent space and the cotangent space, you need to actually give them that extra structure. Any other questions?
Maybe it's usually, like you said, there is also another definition for tangent space where you say you map all, derivations that go from space of functions to R.
Yes.
Kind of operators. And here also it becomes like an operator that takes, but the maps are different. In that case, it is from the space of functions to R. Here it is from V star to R. Is there some connection?
Yeah, so you're asking if there's a connection between the other way of defining a tangent space, which is as derivations, and this idea that the vectors are seen as maps. There's not a direct connection. it's a similar idea in the sense that there's still a dual way of thinking about it, but this is a very specific duality. Vector to covector is a very specific kind of duality. The other one is something that just happens with manifold. And what's really happening is that if you define the vectors in the other way, which we didn't do as derivations, they are still going to end up being an n-dimensional vector space, and then you can build an isomorphism between them. But I don't think it has much to do with this specific isomorphism. It just, the isomorphism, you can make any vector space isomorphic to any other vector space of the same dimension. Okay, so let's see what tensors are. And this might be different from the way you've seen tensors before or not, but we'll see. Okay, so for our purposes, a tensor of type RS on V, so tensors are going to be defined on a specific vector space. They are multilinear maps that take R plus S inputs. And there are going to be R inputs in R copies of V star. So it's going to take R covectors as inputs and S vectors as inputs. And it's going to map these things to real numbers. Now, multilinear, if you have not seen the term before, just means that this map has many arguments, is going to be linear in each one of its arguments. So if you feed to the first argument alpha times something, the alpha you can take it out. And if you do that to the second argument, sorry, you can do that as well. And similarly, sorry, give me a moment. No, I think I'm fine. So for example, let's just do the example of two variables. So if you have a function t, and we have av plus bw, and then we have z, this is atv, z plus bwz. And similarly, if I have t of z plus bw, is a t of z b plus b t of z w. So the idea is that in each one of its arguments, fix everything else. If you do a linear combination inside one of the arguments, you can split it up, take the coefficients outside and the sum outside. You've seen things like this before. Bilinear maps are quite common. And this is just a generalization of bilinear maps to more than two arguments. So that's what tensors are going to be for us, which is probably different than what you've seen before, or maybe not. I don't know why you've seen tensors. But to the generalization aspect, the way they generalize this is that instead of having just maps that go from V to R or V star to R, these maps can go from V star to R, from V to R, but then they can go from two copies of V star to R, or they can go V star times V to R. So there's a lot of ways to generalize this notion. And this obviously fits our original vectors and covectors as part of the tensor definition. So examples, vectors are tensors of type 1,0. R is in quotes because we need to identify vectors with maps on V star. But once you do the identification, which is a natural one to do, then vectors can be seen as tensors. Covectors are exactly tensors because they are maps from V to R. A scalar product is a type of tensor. Scalar product is a bilinear map from V times V to R. So you take two vectors, you take the product, and it spits out a number. Because it's bilinear, it's a tensor of type 2,0. In addition to that, scalar product needs to be symmetric and positive definite, but that's another thing on top of the being a tensor of type 2,0. So these are some classic examples. and we're going to see a more physical example at the end once we actually talk about tensor spaces. In addition to having this property of generalizing vectors and covectors, it generalizes them in another way. If you put all tensors of the same type, RS, all together in a set that we're going to denote this way, so there's this squiggly T to distinguish it from the T of the tangent spaces, we have RS superscript to remember that the type is RS, and V, so we remember that they are based on a vector space V. This is also a vector space. So tensors are vectors in the same way that covectors are vectors. They're just a different kind of vectors. And to make it a vector space, yes?
Oh, sorry. It's just like because the question was from a bit before.
Sure.
I don't know, because thinking of scalar products, sometimes I think of like you said, like just take a vector and another vector. But you can also think of like a covector acting on a vector. No?
Yes, that's a good question. So you're saying the scalar product, you can think of it this way, but can't you also think of it as... So if I understand correctly, you may want to think the scalar product between, so say you have u dot v, you can think of it as being, in a sense, I'm going to call it alpha u. So it's a covector that's related to u, and it acts on v. Is this what you're trying to say?
Yeah, and then the type of the tensor would change, right?
Yes. So to do this, what you're doing really is you're building a map that takes u and sends it to alpha u. So to do this, you need a scalar product. So this is something, remember when I told you that the isomorphism that we constructed was non-canonical between v and v star? If I want to do this, I need a basis. Or, other option, I need extra structure. That extra structure is exactly the scalar product. So if we have a metric on a manifold, we're going to be able to do that. We can go from the tangent space to the cotangent space using the metric. Or if you have any other kind of structure. You just need, essentially, a bilinear map between vectors, which is non-degenerate. So it can be a scalar product, but it doesn't have to be a scalar product. It can be a symplectic structure, and it also works. So that's another way of going from tangent vectors to cotangent vectors. And that's, for example, what you do in classical mechanics when you go from velocity to momentum. You are mapping velocity to momentum by going from the tangent space to the cotangent space.
So why is this tensor type 2,0? But not
0,2. So why is this a type 2,0? It's just the way I... actually, because I messed up, you're right, it's 0,2. It's a very simple answer. Yes, so the way I defined it is if there are S copies of V, then the S is the one on the right. Yes, you can define things with different, you can decide that R is the number of copies of V and S is the number of copies of V star. So I just got confused on which notation I decided on. But that's correct. It's a type 0,2. So this thing that Caroline was saying is correct. You can always think of tensors in a different way. So we define them as maps that go from these copies of V star times the copies of V to R. You could also, let me just create a new page so we don't get confused. You can kind of identify if you have a vector that goes from V to R, if you have an isomorphism between V and V star, a natural one that comes from some extra structure, then you can identify this with a map that goes from V to V star. So in a sense, you're taking the dual on the other side. So this is something you can do, but you need extra structure. So you either already have a scalar product that you use for this, or a symplectic structure that you use for this, and so on. I'm not really going to go into this because we don't have time to deal about all possible ways of tensors. There are other things you can do. For example, no one said that we actually need to have this correct order. I could just mix up the things around it. Just if I want to define it, it becomes very complicated because then I have to account for a lot of stuff. So our tensors always have covectors as first inputs and then after the vectors, but you can always mix them up. So we're going to pretend that that doesn't happen just for simplicity. Any other questions? Okay, so tensors form a vector space, but we would like to know, first of all, what is the dimension of the vector space, and also what the basis is. And we can, just as before, answer both questions in the same way. If we find the basis, we find the dimension. In order to define a basis, we need to know what tensor products are. Okay, so now suppose we have two vector spaces, V and W. And these vector spaces can be anything. They could be tensor spaces. They can be dual spaces to something. It doesn't matter. They are just some vector spaces. In fact, it's probably best if I call them something different. Let me call them W1, W2, so we don't get confused with the V that we were working with before. They have nothing to do with V. So we have these two vector spaces. Give me a moment to just change everything. Okay, so whenever you have vector spaces and you have two maps, they go from the vector space to R. So one of them goes from W1 to R, the other one from W2 to R, and they are both linear. So this really means that alpha belongs to W1 star. Beta belongs to W2 star. Then we can construct their tensor product in this way. We get a new map, which is actually multilinear. And we denote it in this way. So this symbol is the tensor product symbol. So you can think of this as an operation if you want. It's going to be a new map that now goes from W1 times W2. It takes two vectors, one in W1, the other one in W2, and it maps to them the product of alpha applied to W1 and beta applied to W2. So you can easily check that this is indeed a linear map, just because it's essentially defined pointwise, and it's linear in both arguments. So it does fit the definition of a tensor, as long as W1 and W2 are defined in terms of the V above. But you can always take tensor products. So this is just a way of building multilinear maps. The easiest way you can build a multilinear map is by taking the tensor product of two linear maps. And then you can take a sum of them, of two multilinear maps, that's still going to be multilinear, but then it's not as obvious as something like this anymore. So these are the building blocks of multilinear maps. And in fact, the idea of the basis we're going to find is that you have some linear maps, and then all of the basis elements are going to be built in this way, using this tensor product from those basis elements. Can I go on? Is this notion clear? You can generalize tensor products to a lot more things, but for what we need right now, this is probably going to be enough. But you can then take tensor products of tensors in general. But for now, we're just going to deal with this specific case. So this is the page from before that we don't need anymore. OK, so how do we build the basis for the tensor space? So just to remember, we're trying to find the basis for this set, which is a vector space, PRS. So we're going to start with the basis for V itself. So just as before, we denote the elements of the basis as EI, but I'm going to interpret them as being maps that go from V star to R. So So technically speaking, this is a basis for V star star. But we're going to identify them. So because there's a natural way to identify them, we can always do that. So we're always going to think of vectors as being vectors when we need them to be vectors, linear maps when we need them to be linear maps. Then we construct the dual basis for V star. And then we can construct these multilinear maps by taking tensor products of all these things. So we're going to take tensor, all possible ways of taking tensor products of R of these, so R elements of the basis for V, and S elements of the basis for V star. These are multilinear maps by construction, because we started with linear maps, we started taking tensor products of them, so they become multilinear. So we know that these are multilinear. And this map is going to go from V star, I'm going to use this notation just to avoid writing lots of things. So times R, this just means I have the Cartesian product R times, times V. Yes. War. So these are indeed elements of our set. And they actually form a basis. I'm not going to go into all the details because it's the same idea, exactly what we've done before for the cotangent space. To check that these form a basis, you need to check that indeed all of the multilinear maps are going to be able to be written in terms of this. But it's the same idea, because if T is a map in here, then you can always write T in this way. It's a linear combination with a lot of possible sums. And we're using Einstein notation, as usual, to avoid writing all the sums. You have all these numbers. These are real numbers, and they are components of T. So these are most likely the tensors that you have seen so far. So they are this collection of indices. Some have higher indices, the other ones are below, and they transform differently. And then you have these elements. So just as before, you just need to show that multilinear maps are fully specified by how they act on a basis, which makes sense because they are linear. And the components, you can find them by evaluating the basis elements. So if you want to know what Ti1 all the way to Ir, J1 to Js is, you're going to feed it in the first R. You're going to feed it basis elements for V star. And in here, you're going to feed it basis elements of V. So this gives you, given a tensor T seen as a multilinear map, if you want the components, which are the things you usually work with once you've chosen a basis, you just feed it the basis elements. And this is really the equivalent of taking a linear map from two vector spaces and showing it as a matrix by acting on the basis vectors. So it's the same thing exactly, but generalized to tensors. I'm going to show you an example of this with the metric tensor, so it should become clear what the notation is, because with lots of indices, there's many ways to get lost in this. But these are the formulas that you can then use for any kind of case. Any questions before we move on to the last part? Okay, so at this point, we can define the tensor spaces at a point of a manifold. So the tensor spaces at P equal M are just going to be this sets. I'm going to denote them again by the squiggly t, just so we know that they're not the tangent or cotangent space. I'm going to keep the rs to remember what kind of tensor we're dealing with. There's the p subscript to remember that we are exactly at this point, and the manifold. And these are just the sets that we defined before, the tensors of type rs based on the vector space TPM. So everything that we've done before, with v was arbitrary, now v is not arbitrary. V is the tangent space at a point p. And the basis can be built out of coordinates just by taking the tensor products of the basis elements of TPM at T star PM. So this is going to be the basis for tensors in general. And of course, if you change basis, if you change chart, you're going to change the basis. But because these are multilinear maps, if you want to know what, for example, if you change from phi to psi, which means that you're going to change from d over dx I to d over dy I, which in general is going to be something like this. If you know these things, because of the linearity, once you change in here, if this changes and it has some coefficients in front of it, you can just pull them out of the tensor product. The tensor product is also a linear operation. So the point is that you don't need to show, as we did for vectors and covectors, how they change. You can just use the information about how the basis of TPM changes, how the basis of T star PM changes, and then you know how everything changes. You're going to get a chance to do this at tutorial, so you can match these notions with the transformation rules that you've seen before. And we can now finally see an example that you're most likely all going to have seen at this point. And that's the metric tensor at a point. So at a specific point of a manifold, a metric is going to be given by some tensor of type 0,2. So it takes two vectors as inputs and is going to spit out a number. And this is the same idea as the scalar product that I talked about before. But the metric tensor does not have to be positive definite. And in physics, it generally is not. It just needs to be non-degenerate. But for our purposes, it is a tensor of type 0,2. That's what matters to us. So if we have a chart phi with coordinates x0 to x3, just because let's assume we are in a four-dimensional space-time, then the components g mu nu at point p are just going to be given by evaluating g on these two basis vectors. So remember what I told you before, to find the components, you just evaluate on a basis. So you plug in two arbitrary basis elements, and you have dx mu and dx nu. Mu nu can change from 0 to 4. And these are exactly the g mu nu elements of the metric tensor that you've seen before. And conversely, if you want to rewrite your tensor in terms of the components and the basis, then you need to do this linear combination of the g mu nu, which are the components, and then you have the basis. The basis, because this is of type 0,2, is just going to have covectors, and you have these elements here. And this is seen as a tensor exactly that ds squared that you often see in describing the metric. It's just that we actually put a tensor product in between the various dx something instead of thinking of them as these infinitesimal quantities. So this is what you've seen already, and this is how we match things. So hopefully this makes it clear. We actually have quite a lot of time left, so So if there are questions or you want to see something more in detail, then we have the time to do that. Yes?
Just curiosity, you mentioned that the tensor product is a way to make multilinear maps from linear maps, and that's sort of like the building blocks. What about going the other way, given a tensor, how do you decompose it into its building blocks? Is that not always on the mind?
Okay, so the question is, we use the tensor products to go from linear maps to multilinear maps. So now you're asking, if I give you a generic multilinear map, can we come up with these building blocks? Not necessarily, because you could have different building blocks that give you the same thing.
Right. But you can always do that.
Yeah, so you can always go one way, because if I have two linear maps, I take the product, I end up with something. But if I take two linear maps, if I take a tensor and I want to build up where it came from, then there are potentially many ways of doing that. It's like choosing a different basis in a vector space. A certain vector you can write, if I give you a basis and I give you the components, there's only one vector that you can spit out of that. But if I give you a vector, you can come up with a lot of different bases that give you the same vector. So if you think of the basis as being the building block, one direction is, it's surjective but not injective, essentially.
The tensor is a geometric object. You don't need a basis to. Means, can any tensor be written as a tensor product of smaller tensors? Is that general statement?
It can be a sum.
Because you can have
it's a linear combination. So for example, let's put it this way: if I have the zero tensor, which maps things to zero, you can build this out of tensor products of whatever you want. Because if I have the tensor that goes from V to V, and it always, so to every V alpha B, or no, OK, so to every V, V1, V2, it maps always to zero. This is obviously multilinear, because it just maps everything to zero. Well, you can, and we call this tensor T, then T equals whatever alpha you want times zero. And it doesn't matter what alpha is, because it is true in the sense that it's still going to give you exactly the map. So as you can see, there's going to be infinitely many ways of doing this.
I guess my question was not at the level of a particular tensor, but at the tensor space itself.
So is the question, can you always find at least one way of building a tensor out of tensor products? Is that the question?
Sorry, say that again.
And if I give you a tensor, can you always write it out as the tensor product of two smaller things? Is that the question you're asking?
I think that was my first question, but what I was getting at is the more general question. It's given a tensor space, can you always factorize the space itself into two smaller?
As the tensor products, the way we defined it, yes. Now, the way I defined tensor spaces was to avoid putting in too many additional structure, but you can define tensor products of vector spaces. And essentially, this is going to be the space of all the multilinear maps that you're building exactly this way that I'm talking about. So you can always say that tensor space RS V is actually going to be the tensor product of V R times tensor product with V star S times. So this means that you can always decompose the tensor space, because it's actually how it's built.
But if you did not know V, you just had some tensor space.
So the
V such that decomposition works.
The way the tensor space is built, it needs to have V. I cannot just say, well, this is a set of the tensors in it, figure out what V is. Because tensors are maps, at least in what we're working with. They're maps that go from copies of V and V star. If you don't know what V is, you don't know what the maps are, and you don't know what they do. But to go back to your question, because I don't think I answered the thing, although this is true, what is not true is that you can write a tensor as exactly a tensor product of things. Those are some specific kind of tensors. In general, it's going to be a linear combination of things that look like that. Any other questions on these things? Or other things? We have 10 minutes, so even if there are questions from previous lectures, this is a very good time for that. Or if you want to see more examples.
Logistics is this the last lecture for this vector bundles and things like that, or we have one more too?
Right, so there's going to be one more lecture, so there's going to be on Tuesday. So what I'm going to talk about on Tuesday, and then we finish with my part of the course, and then Kemi will take over with differential forms, is now we talked about the tangent space, the cotangent space, and the tensor spaces, but they're always at a point. So we can only talk about vectors at a specific point. And we don't know how to move from one point to the other. We also don't know how to talk about things being continuous or differentiable. So for example, if you go to the example at the end that I gave of the metric tensor, I had to say at a point. I did not talk about the metric tensor being this smooth way of assigning essentially a metric at each point. Because I don't know how to define that yet. I don't know how to say that this g of p is a function that when you move p around, changes smoothly. To do that, we need to talk about bundles. So we're going to define the tangent bundle, cotangent bundle, tensor bundles, and talk about essentially diffeomorphisms and differentiable maps in general. So that's going to be the last lecture on Tuesday.
Just some vector space, I think it's quantum mechanics, you have a Hilbert space, and I want to find a particular factor of the Hilbert space. It seems like you're saying that you can always do that at the level of the space, not for a particular vector in the space.
Okay, so this requires additional structure, and this now becomes a linear algebra slash functional analysis question, but that's okay. So in that case, we don't have this notion of tensors anymore. We start having something more interesting. So remember when I defined tensor products, I told you this is technically not a tensor because W1 and W2 can be any vector spaces you want. The tensor products between vector spaces, you can define them independently on tensors. What we call tensors in differential geometry are specific kind of tensor products where the base space is either V or V star. So in that case, you know, and that's why I said to your question. Now, a different thing can happen if, for example, you have just a vector space with an inner product or without an inner product. If you don't have an inner product and you want to split up your space at a tensor product, there are many ways of doing that, for example. But if you have an inner product, then you can use the inner product to specify a unique way of doing that, for example, with orthogonal vector spaces. So you need some extra structure if you want things to be unique. So for vector spaces, you can always split up your vector space as a tensor space or smaller things. Or generally, I guess, depending on what's happening, but not necessarily in a unique way. So there's always the need for extra structure. That's if there's one thing you should take away from this whole first part of the course is that in order to talk about things, you need structure to define them. And it's easy when you're working with things that look like Rn or are embedded in Rn to forget about that, because Rn has all the structures you might want to think of. It has it.
Yeah.
It's a vector space. It's a Hilbert space. It has an inner product. It's a manifold. It's a differentiable manifold. It's a Riemannian manifold. It's a Lie group. it has anything that you might want to think of, it has it. So it's easy to forget, but when you define things in this way, kind of in a coordinate independent way where you don't use the knowledge of where you're living in, then you need the structure, otherwise it doesn't work. And that, for example, happens for Uber spaces. If you're thinking quantum mechanics, the Uber space is not just going to be Rn. It's going to be infinite dimensional. And you either say, well, let's look at L2 functions just because I know the one. But if you want to take a more philosophical point of view, it's just a set of states. They don't live in anything. They're not functions because they are states. And then you need to start thinking about, because what is this if I don't reference other things, and you need structure. Any last question? Then we can just finish a bit early. If I'd known that this was going to be so short, I would have moved some stuff from last time to this time, because last time was very packed. Sorry about that. It's difficult. I thought this was going to be very long. Oh, well, then have a nice weekend. And by the way, if anyone is interested, I actually made a comic about these things, tensors and dual spaces, a comic, like a few years ago. If you're interested, you can ask me, or you can probably find it if you look hard enough on the internet. Have a nice weekend. See you on Monday for tutorial.